Good morning.
Go ahead.
I'm here because I found out that y'all have a law that says that you're not allowed to live in a camper. And I moved to Ellendale, Delaware on my family's land because I have senior family members who, from COVID, are sick and having health problems. And I was already cutting grass and paying bills and stuff. And there was a camper set up already there that was falling apart that needed to be replaced. And I replaced it. And I stayed in there and got reported. I took all my savings to buy this to move up here from Salisbury because my mother, my senior family members in Ellendale needed my help and stuff. I was already paying electric bill for 3 years, cutting grass and stuff. And I spent all my savings, $15,000, to buy this camper that I got reported saying that I'm staying in it and can't stay in it. And I don't understand why, if it has all the proper hookup and I can just get a permit for it. And I was renting for 7 years from a respectful real estate agent in Salisbury. Now, they said the rental market went up, so they had to raise my rent from $750 to $925. So my reason for the move, I could have kept my house, but I didn't keep it because they were raising the rent and I needed to be all the way in Ellendale. Four family members needing care for, and my dad just died in December. I didn't want to go through what I went through with my dad driving back and forth, and it causing me not to be able to be there for him as much as I need to be there for him.
Okay.
And now I'm homeless. 43 years, I've never been homeless. Before, I got my first worker's permit when I was 14 years old in ninth grade in Georgetown, Delaware. And I worked all through high school and went to school. I never took time off, even when I got pregnant by my husband in school. I never took time off. I still worked. I went to school. I took the 4 weeks off, went back. Never been homeless. Bought my own trailer when I was 17 years old. And my family got too big, so I rented it out. The first tenants tore it up. So I took that loss. I ended up having to rent an apartment. And I graduated from getting an apartment, working at the hospital and stuff, and doing better to being able to rent a house. And now I'm in the situation where me trying to help family has left me homeless.
Well, we'll see. Is there anything else? We will see. We can't help you. Mr. Whitehouse, the gentleman over there, you need to talk with him, and we'll see if we can't help you somehow to figure this out. Okay? Thank you. You would get with her, Jamie. Yeah, ma'am, if you would step outside with him, we'll see if we can help you. Okay. Operator, check online, please, for public comment.
At this time, there's no one on the line.
Okay, we're going to conclude public comment. And Mr. Lawson. First person, Matt Robinson, I think.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Today we're joined by Mr. Matt Robinson. He is here today to give County Council an update on the previous year's slam dunk to the beach. Mr. Robinson, welcome. Come on down. Thanks for being here.
Council members, thanks for putting on your docket today. Good to see everyone. Really, just wanted to come today.
It's loaded. Use the mouse to go down to the bar and pull up the PowerPoint.
Here comes some assistance. I need it all the time, so there you go.
Go to show.
And then you should be able to use the clicker.
Great, right here. Perfect. Thank you. Council, thank you for putting on the docket today. Really just came today to say thank you to the council. I don't think I've been since the pandemic to give an update on the event. And again, I still can't believe it was 2014 when we first talked about bringing back the tournament and we're moving towards year 9 coming up. So really just wanted to give an update on this past year's event and kind of where we're moving in the future. So this last year's event, The mission behind the Slam Dunk Tournament is to bring elite basketball, the best players and teams in the country, into Sussex County on that break in between Christmas and New Year's. So we had 20 teams, four teams that were ranked in the top 25, and five top 50 players that were participating in this year's tournament. Also, we added this year that we had a fourth day of the tournament, which we called Cape Night, where we had the boys and girls Cape teams playing in the event to make sure that we had Sussex County representation. And we also had Seaford as a representative for Sussex County in the event, along with our national list of teams. Some event statistics, it was basically we had all the games live streamed. This year we had advertisements being run. I know the county had an ad that ran through the streaming, advertising the beautiful location of Sussex County and all the great benefits that it can offer. And again, we had over 20 states that were tuning into the streaming. We had 4,500 attendees at the game, 25 major college coaches, and we had 70 on-site media. So again, we always talk about this event. It's a local event, but it gains national attention. And so we achieved that again this year, both with the great event, with having our participants coming from the local community, plus getting national recognition for Sussex County through the streaming of that event. So again, on the social media side of things, we had over 125,000 impressions, 18,000 views, and over 33,000 people reacted to different videos that we had out there. And again, that's spread across the entire country as far as the event is concerned. Some sponsor insights that, again, we cannot do the event without the sponsorship dollars that we have. Our tournament is unique than other tournaments that to get the elite teams, we have to pay for those teams to come, providing travel stipends, covering their lodging while they're here. And so, again, the sponsorship dollars that we have are critical to us be able to host that event. But we've grown that we have 45 local sponsors and vendors that are involved with the event. And the thing is, we have 96% of returning sponsors. So our sponsors see the benefit of it, and they return, and we continue to try to add local businesses as far as the sponsorship is concerned. Now, some things as far as we do a survey every year with the event where we survey the fans that are coming. And again, what we'd like to think that we're delivering what we promise in that 86% of the people come to see these elite teams and players. And just think about this, that we had two players that were on the national championship team from UConn this year that had played in the tournament. And that's just another example. And matter of fact, just watching last night, he was injured with the Denver Nuggets, but Colin Gillespie, who won a national championship at Villanova, was on the Denver Nuggets, and they're going on to the NBA. So we're bringing the elite players, you know, into the local area for the local residents to see. People have an overall positive experience. It's a positive thing for the sponsors. And one thing that's really interesting is if you take a look at that number, that only 34% of the people that are coming are out-of-town visitors, meaning that this is a local event. This is for the local community. And so the sponsors, you know, we always communicate to the sponsors that it's not just the people coming in for these 3 days. It is people feeling good about you for the other 12 months at getting behind the event. That, again, I really think it's become that local event that we wanted it to be when we envisioned it at the very beginning. But still, we bring out-of-town people, and they're staying in our hotels, going to our restaurants, doing the shopping, and really getting an opportunity to experience Sussex County. The economic impact for this past year was over $600,000, with 118 jobs supported and a local tax contribution back of $6,000. And I just want to recognize Delaware Tourism, Southern Delaware Tourism, Scott Thomas, that we worked together, that he allowed us to use his economic impact model to run the numbers for us this year and come up with those numbers to be able to share with you here today. Again, just a list of the alumni that are out there that have played in this tournament. You know, the one thing, I know there was a history of a previous tournament, and we always talked about we wanted to create our own history. So the listing of players, these are the players that have played in the tournament since we brought it back that are now playing in the NBA. So again, it's the highest quality players that we're bringing in as far as the event is concerned. And again, just taking a look at the sponsors that we now have on board. And again, we couldn't do it without the support. And I think, again, cannot thank the county council enough for the belief in the event when we proposed bringing it back in 2014. And so it's been an incredible experience being involved with the tournament. I serve as the chairman, as a voluntary chair for the event. And again, just really happy that I have had this opportunity to do so. So I just want to, again, take number one, give you an update, but again, just say thank you. We couldn't have done it without the county council, you know, Mike, and going back to the very beginning and having Martin Donovan on our board and believing in the event. And I hope that we've lived up to what we said we were going to do. And I'm sorry, I put some pride ones up there with Danny Hurley. I kind of joke, I'm pointing. I said, hey, Danny, that's the direction of a national championship when he was at Cape Jim. and then also hanging out with Coach Calipari there a few years back when he was at the event. So for all the county council and on behalf of all the tournament, it is great to bring this event each year at the holiday season. I hear from the local community talking about how much they look forward to it. You know, slam dunk tickets are now in, you know, Christmas stockings, and I do stuff in sport for a living, but I think the real win is when you see people enjoying themselves and benefiting from the event that you put on. And I couldn't do it without our board and all the volunteers to get involved to make that event possible. So thank you very much.
Well, Matt, thanks for coming and give us an update. I remember back in 2014 when you came to us and said, just give us a chance. And we put money up and gave you a chance. And I think you've done a great, you and your committee have done a great job. Obviously, I'm a big basketball fan. I play a lot of basketball, but I mean, it's a great thing for Sussex County. You can bring national players in here and national teams in here. People pay attention to that. And you all done a great job. We look forward to continue working with you. But thank you for all you've done.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Very good.
Thank you for your time.
Well, let's see. Mr. Lawson, well, I guess you want to take a break now before we go get started.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, we're at the point where we need to work on our fiscal 2024 budget presentation. So, as in years past, Mr. President, members of council, I do have the annual budget letter I will reference, and then Ms. Jennings and I will lead the presentation from the podium. So, there's no questions, I shall begin. Dear Mr. President and members of Council, as required by Title IX of the Delaware Code, I respectfully submit the proposed annual operating budget for Sussex County for fiscal year 2024. The FY24 proposed budget was developed by the County Administrator, the Finance Director, COO, Deputy Finance Director, and Manager of Accounting. This recommended budget was drafted after receiving numerous submissions from county departments. We greatly appreciate the efforts of the directors and their staff in assisting us in producing a balanced budget, many of whom have joined us today in chambers or watching online. Like so many organizations in today's economy, Sussex County is attempting to navigate through an uncertain financial environment as the economy continues to decelerate. The two driving factors influencing the county's budget are the increases in cost due to inflation and decreases in revenue due to higher interest rates. As such, we followed a conservative budget philosophy in the development of the FY24 budget to insulate against any foreseeable declines. This philosophy uses cautious revenue projections and keeps expenses at an ongoing sustainable level. The fiscal year 24 total budget is $278.6 million, which represents an overall decrease of $15.6 million. The decrease is being driven by one-time expenditures occurring in the previous year. These expenditures include the completion of various capital projects and the use of one-time American Rescue Plan Act funds. As any prudent government, we continue to keep our ongoing operational expenses in check. Excluding one-time purchases, the overall operating budget is increasing 2.8%, which is trending below inflation. These efforts allow the county to continue to provide the services its residents and visitors come to expect, while not passing on to the taxpayers the additional costs of general operations. The county receives the bulk of its revenue each year from both property taxes and realty transfer tax, referred to as RTT, with RTT being the largest revenue source. In recent years, RTT has grown to account for almost 40% of our revenue. In the past, it accounted for under 25%. Relying on RTT collections for operations presents a risk due to the volatile nature of this funding. This year, the county is taking steps to reduce its reliance on RTT, and it accounts for 35% of the FY24 revenue. However, as we look to the future, this is a concern the county will need to address. And although RTT is our single greatest source of revenue, it is limited to some of the county's most critical services, including our paramedics, fire and ambulance companies, police, 911 dispatchers, economic development, assessment, public works, and open space. Thus, we can keep pace with the population and the demand for our critical services through the use of RTT. However, should RTT drop below anticipated levels, it is likely at some point in the future the county will need to seek additional revenue from the taxpayers. Revenues are only one side of the budget equation. The other side is the expenses that support our government services and county council priorities. Any new project requests were scrutinized to ensure they are necessary, they align with the county's objectives, and address long-term concerns and issues of this council. The priorities of the council that are supported in the budget include sustaining government services without adding a financial burden to our current and future residents, providing adequate services for our growing elderly population, increasing workforce housing opportunities, and fostering an environment that attracts businesses and creates jobs for our highly skilled workforce. The county council deserves credit for its leadership and continued fiscal responsibility, which have helped build a strong foundation that has allowed this government to continue to live within its means and stay strong during economic uncertainty. In closing, the county's fiscal year 2024 budget recognizes that the economy is trending downward and therefore continues its conservative approach to ensure the fiscal foundation stays strong, where we can weather any financial storm that comes our way, just as we've done in the past. Okay, Mr. President, we're gonna move down to the podium and start to go over specifics in our presentation. Okay. So now we're going to get into the specifics of the PowerPoint that we first started with during the workshop that you guys attended several weeks ago and starting to put the budget together. As always, we like to take a look back at this year's budget and the accomplishments that staff have performed throughout the year. Many of the staff that have joined us today, I want to thank them for taking time to be here with us. We'll highlight some of these milestones in these lists. I would encourage you and I would encourage the public to review the list that's going to be provided in this work, in this PowerPoint today when it goes up online. These are the organizational goals of the county, and then these are the milestones that were accomplished in this year's budget. They're broken down by our goals, and this one begins with the services that we promote our public safety. And it's really amazing, and I think it's a good opportunity for us to take a look back in what we have accomplished in just this past budget year. I've highlighted a few here on the slide, and I'll go over some of these. For example, we achieved accreditation through the Commission of Accreditation of Ambulance Services, that's our EMS, and out to the EOC, we earned reaccreditation as a Center of Excellence in Emergency Fire Dispatch, and as the world's 30th police accredited center of excellence and 24th triple accredited center of excellence. Under the goal of services that promote well-being, we assisted more than 320 households with housing repairs, that's up from last year, launched the Housing Trust Fund to create and preserve affordable housing units, and began the Western Sussex sewer area. Under the goal of promoting prosperity, we closed Excite Sussex loans in the amount of $2.3 million, retaining 43 jobs, assisted the Franklin Business Park in securing $1 million in site readiness funding, and leased 4.3 acres to the Great Outdoor Cottages, which added 120 jobs here in Sussex. Under the goal of promoting an enriched quality of life, we used discarded materials and donations from the Delaware Division of Libraries and Sussex Read Aloud to stock little free libraries around the county and distribute over 1,000 books at community events such as Seaford's Read and Feed program, Greenwood's Health Fair, and Ellendale's Community Park. Partnered with the Ocean View Police Department to host a library booth at the Cops and Goblins family event, promoting library services and resources to approximately 1,500 adults, and providing paperback books to 500 children. Under the goal of providing personal and professional services, our mechanics performed 645 preventive maintenance repairs on county-owned vehicles. That's a 7% increase over last year. Created a GIS web map integration with the Planning and Zoning Document Management System. Recorded a total of 69,271 documents with a turnaround time of averaging 10 minutes or less, which is a 2-minute improvement from last year, And we began the process of digitalizing, indexing, and uploading building permits onto the PNZ OnBase system, which is 2 years of permits for this past year. Under the organizational goal of providing services in a fiscally responsible manner, completed 21 existing wastewater use agreements totaling $1.3 million, created the county's first ever popular, very popular, annual financial report, earned another GFOA Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting, and our lost time incidents for the county are at a 0.87 per 100 employees. That is below national average, which is 2 cases per 100 employees. So again, great milestones for our county staff and all the hard work that goes into what they do every single day. And we couldn't do this without them, including creating the budget and putting forth this budget today, but also everything they do throughout the year. And now let's get into specifics. I'll ask Ms. Jennings to come forward and she will jump into PowerPoint. Thanks.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. We're going to jump right into the numbers. So as Mr. Lawson had mentioned, we are obviously seeing a decline in the economy, specifically the real estate market. And you can see here on the graph a couple of those statistics. So our building permits are down 9% over 2 years. The 2023 projected numbers are 10 months into the fiscal year when I pulled those numbers. So they're pretty accurate where we're going to end at the end of this fiscal year. And you can also see both dwelling permits and residential permits. Residential permits, also including multifamily homes, are seeing almost 30% decline in those numbers since 2021. That's over 1,000 permits a year in those declines. So you'll see that that is going to impact us financially as we move forward through these slides. More statistics. The ones at the top that are purple, those are building-related statistics. So as building permits go down, so will building code inspections. And we are seeing a decline there. It's a 4% decline. Deed documents recorded, you can see there's a substantial decrease there. And a lot of that has to do with, as interest rates rise, people are not refinancing their homes either. So, and that requires a deed recordation. So you can see 2021 was a peak, but you can see how that's gone down again, and that's 4% decrease over the year before. Utility inspections, again, as developments come on, we perform those inspections, that's a decline. Some other statistics, not necessarily related to the housing market, constable complaints are relatively flat. Register wills revenue is going up as our population increases, as the value of those estates increase, that will see an increase over time. And then the next statistics are all sewer related. And as we're bringing on more districts, you can see there's increases as we're bringing on more customers. So the overall budget summary, you can see here that it overall it's decreasing $15.6 million or 5.3%. A lot of that decrease is related to the American Rescue Plan. As we spend those monies down, they will be no longer there to spend. And our capital projects are timing of when those projects are being completed. So let's go on to the operations side and those increases over there. So the general fund is increasing $4 million. What I do want to say though is about 2.8% of that is continual operational expenses. The other 2 million or the other 2% is related to one-time purchases. So we are keeping our spending under inflation, which is very important as we see the economy declining. Same thing when you go into the water fund. We are decreasing expenses as much as we can to keep this sustainable. The sewer fund, also to keep that sustainable, that is well below the inflationary rate of 1.4%. Our pension sees an increase as health insurance costs go up and we have more people are added to the pension fund. So our revenue highlights, there are no increases in the tax rate. We are using reserves. The use of reserves are up from last year. There's $10 million in the general fund and $15 million in the capital fund. I will go into the details of what we are spending those reserves on, but they are one-time purchases. Tax revenue is up due to improvements. It's up $687,000 or 3.9%. Building-related revenues, as we had showed in the chart, where we're seeing a decline in those numbers, obviously the revenue also sees a decline. So both building-related revenues and really transfer taxes down $1.3 million. That's a total $2.6 million of decreases in revenue. Where are we going to make up that revenue? And you will see our grant revenue, specifically grants coming from the state of Delaware to help cover the paramedic expenses, is up 1.5. Sheriff revenue, unfortunately, as the economy is showing a decline, our sheriff revenue then does go up. So that's up 200,000. And Will's, as I mentioned before, due to population and estate values, is up 200,000. So if you add up all those up numbers, you see how that offsets the two down numbers. I am proposing an increase in Dewey water rates of $15. This is consistent of what we have been doing over the last couple of years. When we get into that detail again, that has a lot to do with the Rehoboth Beach water contract. A $10 increase in sewer rates to keep it sustainable, increase in connection fees to help with the long-term capital plan is up. We'll talk about some engineering fee changes. Again, most of that is related to sewer. And there is a decrease or elimination of assessment fees in seven areas due to debt being paid off or being paid down.
I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. When we say that we're using reserves, I think that can be misinterpreted. Okay. So define reserves.
So it's prior year, it's savings. It's prior year revenues over expenses. They will be, you'll see, there are some accommodations tax. It's restricted funds, so really transfer tax, accommodation tax, those types of savings.
Primarily transfer tax.
Correct.
So this is, it's not an extraordinary circumstance that we're dipping into reserves suddenly. We've done that. Oh,
sorry. Good. Keep forgetting the button. So it's not unusual for us to incorporate transfer tax, you know, on an annual basis. We've done that historically. It's more in the way we define it, because sometimes it sounds like we're balancing the budget with savings, and technically we are, because it's transfer taxes going into reserves and then being used on an ongoing basis, but we're still extraordinarily healthy and we're not burning our savings, so to speak.
Correct. All these savings are planned savings to use in the future. So what I have done in the last few years is specifically in the budget ordinance says if we collect over $32 million in really transfer tax, any of that excess funds gets moved over to capital to be spent in future capital projects. And right. Then we use those funds in the, so it's a long-term planning tool that we have spent that money, or we save that money in the past to spend in the future.
Right. I just want the public to be clear on the terminology mm-hmm. that's in play here.
So the revenue highlights, you can see, as Mr. Lawson mentioned, really transfer tax is the biggest part of our revenue source at 35%. But as he also mentioned, this used to be 40%. So it is a good thing that we are seeing that percentage go down. The other numbers, taxes are pretty similar to the year before. This includes property tax, accommodation tax as well. It's not just property, I'll be clear with that. Charges for services was 18%, so we are seeing a decline there. And again, that's building-related revenues that's impacting that part of the pie chart. All right, let's dig into the building-related revenues and how this is impacting our budget. So if you start back at 2021, these are actual audited numbers, and you look at 2021 to 2022, so we did see a peak during COVID, a lot of improvements being done. We realized the $2.1 million decrease. Now, as we're almost done with 2023, I can pretty much expect we're going to see another $2.5 million decrease. So between those 2 years, we're seeing a $4.6 million decrease in revenue. As we prepared this 2024 budget, My best estimate, still being conservative, is to take 75% of what we did in 22. So I have put in another $1.8 million anticipated decrease in what the actual is. Now, that's different than my budgeted decrease of $1.3 million because I obviously budget less than what we probably will be bringing in, just to be safe. I have that little bit of a buffer there. But looking at this chart, what is concerning is if you look at 2024 and you go backwards, it wasn't that long ago where we were collecting less than that. So we're almost at pre-COVID numbers, 2020 numbers, but prior to that, we did not reach these levels. So where and how far this goes down, we're not so sure, but we're monitoring this very carefully. Same thing with real estate transfer tax. I do anticipate a $12 million decrease between what we collected last year versus what we're gonna collect this year. I do have less budgeted for real estate transfer tax. Like I said, it's a small percentage. It's 35% this year of the expenses. So that is down $1.3 million of what's in the budget for 2023. Again, similar chart that you saw previously. You can see you go backwards. You can see there's a big dip. It did go back to 2010 at 13.1 million. As I mentioned in previous years, I don't think that is our base anymore because transfers are gonna happen and we do have more improvements. It's still, again, something we need to monitor carefully as we move forward. Realty transfer tax can only be spent on certain areas, and as you can see here, most of realty transfer tax is spent on public safety. That's 90% of what's in the budget. Budget for realty is spent on public safety. And then we have economic development, and as we have the big reassessment project continuing, a big percentage of that realty goes to help fund that project. So I wanted to break it out on where are we seeing the increases in the general fund. And obviously personnel is our biggest expense at 51%. So you would think that most of our increase would be in personnel. It's close. Number one is actually grant and aid. About 2.3 million of that 4 million is the increase. But there is some one-time grants in there. So that is not an ongoing cost. And the other part is personnel. When we have merits and a cost of living adjustment in there, that is where it makes up that increase. And everything else is pretty much balances each other out. You can also look at the expenses by function versus type of expense. And what you can see down here, and the legend over on the right's in the same order as the bar charts. So at the bottom, the biggest expense is public safety. And that is the internal public safety cost here. It does not include what's in grant and aid. Grant and aid is about 10.3 million is public safety. So you add those two together, you can see definitely public safety is our biggest expense. So you can see over time which areas have increased. You'll see grant and aid is the largest increase on there. And again, that is related to a one-time grant. What else you can notice in this chart is in 2020 through 22, there's another blue chart bar there. It says other financing uses. And this goes back to what Mr. Riley was mentioning about use of savings. And I had mentioned that we have been putting realty transfer tax aside and moving that to capital for future purchases. And that's what 20, 21, and 22 show, is that use being moved over. And you don't see that in the budget until we realize those gains that you actually put in those savings for future purchases. All right, moving on to staffing and positions. Again, we are very careful of adding new positions. We know what's happening in the economy out there. So the only increases in staffing are related to sewer. We have one utility tech and two in the environmental services group for three positions. We are eliminating four positions in the general fund and replacing them with four public safety employees to help with the growth in population. So those net each other out in the general fund for a total of, like I said, three employees, and that is related specifically to the sewer fund. So here's the time to talk about the use of reserves. And I had said we're spending $10 million in general fund and $15 million in capital projects. On the slide, there's green numbers. Those are specifically realty transfer tax reserves. So yes, the majority of it is realty transfer tax that we have put aside year after year to be used. The other one is the accommodations tax. We save that money, and then once it's requested, then we spend it. So that is also a reserve that just keeps building up. So we have about $2 million in the bank. $1 million has already been earmarked, has not been spent. But it shows to be spent in the future. And you'll notice, again, we're not balancing the budget on reserves for any operational cost. So we could go down this whole list here, and you can see none of this is operation in the general fund or capital fund. Okay, grant and aid. And as I mentioned, this is the largest increase, biggest part of the budget. Aside from public safety. I'm not going to go into too much detail on this slide for public safety, libraries, and open space because I have other slides for that. So to touch up on the other topics, economic development is the same. The Excite Sussex Loan, Downtown Development District, we're continuing those. Community assistance is 7%. What an item to note here is the housing assistance, it says $750,000. It is requested, proposed that we put $450,000 back into the Housing Trust Fund for settlement assistance. And there's also $300,000 for emergency rehab. And then I've already talked about the accommodations tax. This is $3 million, $2 million being reserves, $1 million being what I expect to collect in the next year. And then agriculture and drainage. These are ongoing costs. There is a one-time grant in here for the UD Ag education program for $60,000 for a capital project. Okay, like I said, we'll get into details of the big ones on that slide. So the first one is public safety. And you can see over time, we continue to support public safety, increase the funding for public safety. Our state police contract continues to grow. This would be for 23 supplemental troopers. Local law enforcement has an increase. This would give an extra $5,000 to each local law enforcement agency. Fire and safety sees an increase. We did give them almost $800,000 last year to help with BLS salaries. That number's in there again this year. Plus we have a $200,000 amount in there for a fire service study. And all this, again, a combination of the building permit fee and realty transfer tax is what pays for public safety. Libraries, same thing here. You can see the trend since 2020. There's been increases year after year. Their increases come specifically right from the library tax on the tax bill. This works out to be about $73,000 from the previous year, and it's, like I said, due to the growth in those assessments, those tax bills going out. How we pay for the $2.9 million, $1.9 million is just the library tax. We have a mobile home placement tax, and then the rest of it's made up with the general property tax. Open space, we are going to continue to fund this at a higher level. There is another $6 million in the capital fund for open space purchases, and $1.4 million on the operations side where we do partnerships with farmland preservation or the land trust. So a total of $7.4 million total. On the operational side, reason it says 2.9, is that we knew this year, and this is that one-time grant I have talked about and referenced why grants have gone up. There is a $1.5 million grant in to help the state of Delaware with a recreational area at the Trap Pond State Park. This is being used with one-time RTT reserves. So the $1.5 million, the new grant, plus the $1.4 million for the open space partnerships is the 2.9 in operations for open space. All right, quickly touch the capital side of the budget. So the pie chart over on the right, you can see the majority of those expenses are our airport and business park being 36%. This is a decline from last year because the public safety building for the paramedic admin training facility is going to be completed by June 30th. So that is out. The ones that I wanted to highlight, though, is in orange. You can see there's land improvements of $981,000. This has to do with the Hopkins Preserve Master Plan, the partnership with the Land Trust that was talked about a few weeks ago. It's a three-year plan to make that park a public park. Also new is a mobile library. So on the right, I have a picture of our mobile library. It requires a CDL. We're looking into having a smaller unit that we can hire somebody not without a CDL, but still provide a high-level service to the community. And we're estimating that could cost about $400,000. That would be RTT reserves as well. And then I mentioned on the previous slide, this is where you find that $6 million in property acquisition for open space. All right. Sewer. Again, just like the other slides, you can see the increase over time to operate our sewer. We do see substantial increases as we do bring on new customers. New customers require higher costs in operations. You'll see that we've kept this increase minimal to 1.4%, but even with that, we still have to increase rates, and I am doing that. And you can see what I'm showing here is we are continuing to use savings in operations on this side. So where we talked about on general fund, not using savings to balance the budget for operations, we're doing this on sewer, and we can't continue to do this. And we are,
This is RTT savings?
No. Right. No, this is,
right.
Sewer completely
that.
Separate. Yes, no. This is previous sewer fees that were collected. We're using those savings. We have about 17% in reserves. It's a little bit lower than I'd like. I'd like to see that number at 20%. So you can see in 22, the rate was 296. 2023, we increased it to 320. That brought in an extra $1.9 million. I'm asking another 10% increase to bring in another $853,000. And as you can see, that should cover. We're putting in $601,000 in savings. This rate increase should help to cover those use of savings as we're moving forward. Where are their increases? Just like I should on the general fund, theirs isn't in personnel when it comes to the cost to run a sewer facility. Theirs is in the operation and maintenance contracts that cost to keep this running. Personnel seeing a similar increase as in the general fund, but the big increase is contractual services, and specifically that's maintaining our collection lines is where that increase is coming from. As I mentioned at the very beginning of the presentation, there are some increases in some engineering fees. Specifically, they're broken out in sewer review fee, water review fee, road review fee. And we took a deep dive to make sure that our fees that we're charging are covering our cost. And recently, we've taken on some more reviews, the review of the phasing plan or the detailed grading plans. So when you add up that staff time and the increases that staff have received, we're not quite breaking even. So we have to adjust these rates to break even on those fees. And this slide, every fee increase I'm requesting has a reason for that increase.
So I just keep clarifying, thinking from the public's point of view, to make sure that everybody understands that the sewer budget is autonomous, separate from the county's general budget, and it has to be self-sustaining, and there's no commingling of funds.
That is correct. We keep them completely separate. You got it. We're going to talk a little bit about water here in a second, but for simplicity purposes, we have these charges together. So the connection fees for both water and sewer requesting to go in, to go up, they're related to inflation. We know what our capital projects are in the future. The sewer service fee is going up. We have a 20-year capital plan. We know what that capital plan looks like, what's coming in the future, and what we need to cover those improvements to our treatment facilities. A lot of the increase here is inflation. If you look at construction costs over the last 3 years, they have increased 15% in costs. So you'll notice that that percentage of increase is very similar to the cost of inflation that we've seen in the last 3 years. Here are the assessment rates. I did mention that we have 7 districts that are going to decrease or be eliminated, and those are in green. There is one new rate, Mallard Creek, that will be coming online. So there is a new rate there. But you'll see we do have some decreases. All right. Water. We have very small water district in Dewey and in Ellendale. We are trying to keep this sustainable. It's being difficult year after year. We have made some more efficiencies, moved some staff around to try to keep this cost as low as we can, because as you can see here, starting in 2021, we started seeing operational losses, which means we're using savings to keep this sustaining. So 2021, 22, expect it again in 23. 24 is budgeting with the rate increase. We're still going to be using savings to try to balance this budget. We did know this with the city of Rehoboth in 2021. They did increase their rates to us. That was going to increase $300,000. In a big budget like sewer or general fund, you know, we could absorb it a little bit easier, but not in a water fund that, you know, you have 3,000 people. It's substantial. So as I had mentioned back in 2021 when I did this budget, my proposal would be to continue to increase rates $15 a year. So that is my proposal to keep that. Good note is if you look on the green chart, if you look at what the proposed rate is at 392 annually total, if you look at what Artesian, Rehoboth, and Lewis, their metered rates are running using an average metered service, they're still, this proposed rate is still under their rate. All right, last topic. So the sewer capital, much bigger than the general fund capital. Remember, general fund capital was $19 million. You will see $66 million capital projects here. Most of this is new communities coming on our system, 74% of that. So anywhere from Concord Road down is anything new customers coming in. And a lot of that gets paid by assessment charges specifically to those districts as they come on. Anything above that or any treatment plant upgrades, and again, that's a lot smaller, at $17.3 million. A lot of that will be paid with connection fees that we've saved up previously. I think that rounds everything out. The public hearing for this, if the budget gets introduced today, it will be June 20th, 2023. If anybody has any comments in the public, we have an email, budget@sussexcountyde.gov. Council have any questions for Mayor Mr. Lawson?
Great presentation.
I'm finished.
I know you are.
Oh, thank you.
I was aware of that. I could tell when you fold your papers
yes,
up.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to go home now. Can I please be excused?
But as always, thank you and your team that puts this together. I know it's a lot of hard work. a lot of work past the hours in this office, but thank you for all you do and all your staff does. Any questions of council? Okay, we'll, any questions of council? One more time.
Yep. I think it's a great, you know, presentation. I mean, it always reminds me of fixing Thanksgiving dinner. It takes hours and hours and hours. It takes 20 minutes to eat, you know. And you think of the amount of work that goes in this for a half-hour presentation.
Right.
You know, it's a lot of work. Well done.
Thank you.
Amen.
Good work, Gina.
I have the ordinances.
If you have, yeah, we'll have to get them introduced for you. Go ahead.
All right, the first ordinance title is an ordinance establishing the annual operating budget for fiscal year 2024.
And we'll introduce that? There you go.
Okay, and then the second one is an ordinance establishing annual service charges, annual assessment rates for collection and transmission and or treatment and connection charges for all Sussex County water and sanitary sewer districts.
I'll introduce it.
Okay, Mr. Hudson introduces that. So Mr. Riley introduces first and Mr. Hudson the second. You're good.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad you'd have to use Mr. Lawson to explain anything to us here, so that's a good thing. Mr. Lawson, administrator's report.
All right, thank you. Administrator's report for May 23rd, 2023, item 1. Delaware State Police year-to-date activity report for April 2023 is attached, listing the number of violent crime and property crime arrests, as well as total traffic charges and corresponding arrests. In addition, DUI and total vehicle crashes investigated are listed. In total, there were 191 troopers assigned to Sussex for the month of April. Item 2, a reminder, the county offices will be closed on Monday, May 29th to observe the Memorial Day holiday. Council will not meet on Tuesday, May 30th. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be held on Tuesday, June 6th at 10 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Medlars, you've got a couple things on here. Oh, push the button on the bar. There you go.
First one up, Pintail Point Project, and you are aware of the Pintail Point expansion that was shown on the capital project list. It is fully funded. We did do the first round of bidding. I gave you a history of how we got into Pintail Point. I gave you a history of our funding, how we obtained our funding, how the engineering was acquired, and the design and permitting and bidding. We had a project advertised, we had 5 responses, and the responses were within the budget, so I can't say that we're not within the budget, but this is a state-funded project. It requires 3 certifications, and the 2 lowest bidders did not complete the certifications. That leaves us with no choice but to go to a rebid, because the 3rd lowest bidder would put us over budget. So I'm in a conundrum, unfortunately adding more work for our staff, for myself, but I'm asking you to reject all bids and go to round 2. Now I have a motion. And I did include the full breakdown. You see which certifications were missed and why they were missed and where we stand. Be moved based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department that all bids for contract S21-16 Pintail Point Sewer Expansion be rejected and the contract be rebid.
Thank you, Council. Motion, Mr. Riley, second. Mr. Schaefer, any questions on the
board?
Yes.
Reed?
Yes.
Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, we're probably going to advertise it next week, so you should see us come back fairly quickly. The next project is the project which doesn't seem to want to be closed out. And so in this particular case, I gave you a full history of the home elevation project at Berry Street. Let's leave it at this. And the project is complete as far as we're concerned. The project has been granted substantial completion by Sussex County. We have filed, Ms. Ross left us, but she and I filed the reimbursement request. Now, the FEMA changed the closeout guidance, and there's a number of other documents which have to be submitted. We got all these other documents ready to submit with one item, which is the restriction of the deed for the life of the improvement, i.e. the house, that the flood insurance has to be maintained at or above the level of the assistance received. So that's not meant any words. The subrecipient refused to sign the declaration despite the fact that he committed to signing the declaration. And that is over some arguments we have on the construction side. So after a lot of back and forth with FEMA and DEMA, the agency agreed that they would accept a motion by council authorizing the administrator to file the declaration. So you have the draft in your packet. You've seen all the back and forth where we are. You see that DEMA has accepted this, and Mr. Lawson stands ready to sign once you approve and authorize him to sign.
Do you have a motion?
That will allow us to close the project and not return the FEMA funds, which is very important to us, obviously. Be it removed based upon the recommendation of Sussex County Engineering Department, council authorized the county administrator to execute and record the deed restriction associated with 25867 Berry Street in Millsboro as part of the Federal Hazard Mitigation Assistance Program.
Pleasure, council.
Adoption.
Motion, Mr. Riley, second.
Second.
Mr. Schaefer, any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will yield, Mr. Carried. And last, sir?
Last is the general labor and equipment contracts. And again, tying back to Ms. Jennings' previous presentation, as you can see, we're consistently increasing the expenditures on the operation and maintenance side in order to keep up with our asset maintenance. And so this is the third year of a three-year contract, and we have a recommendation to renew one of the contractors, George and Lynch, but not renew the one for JJID. We've had some emergency response deficiencies, and we had some issues with getting the pump station improvement projects, which are very important to us, efficiently staffed and completed in a timely manner. So for that reason, we do have a split recommendation for that third year, which would be a continuation and funding of the George and Lynch's portion of the general labor and equipment contract. And as you can see, last year was a split award. This year is a single award. So all the money is set aside in the budget, which is $5 million under the general labor and equipment contract, be moved into that contract. We would like for you to authorize the closeout of the last remaining work order on the JJID and then affirm the non-renewal of the contract. So I have two motions.
Please read your first one.
Be it removed based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department that County Council approve George and Lynch's bid packages A and B for contract number 22-01 fiscal 22 general labor and equipment contract for the second one-year contract extension in the aggregate amount up to $5 million at the unit prices previously bid.
Pleasure, Council.
So
motion, Mr. Schaefer, a second.
A second.
Mr. Hudson, questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mr. Schaefer?
Yes.
Mr. Green?
Yes.
Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Next, sir.
And let it be noted that the even with all the, as you can see, labor increases, George and Lynch has not requested any change to the unit prices, which is a real good partner here. And second one is, be moved based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department that council approve the closeout of ongoing FY23 work order 27 under JJID's Inc.'s contract number 22-01 FY22 general labor and equipment contract without issuing a second one-year extension.
Pleasure, council. Motion, Mr. Schaefer, second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mr. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will yes, Mr. Carey. Thank you, sir. Grant request, Ms. Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. The first grant request is Millsboro Historical Society. Applicants are requesting $5,000 for the Jacob Godwin School. Funds will go towards maintenance expenses. Last grant received was $3,000. It was from $2,000 from Mr. Riley, $500 from Mr. Schaefer, $500 from Mr. Hudson. Mr. Riley placed on the agenda.
Mr. Riley.
I will offer $2,000 again.
Okay.
I'd like to offer $500 from the third district.
Okay. Anybody else?
I'll do $500 too.
Okay. Motion, Mr. Riley, second, Mr. Hudson, to grant $3,000 to the Millsboro Historical Society for the Jacob Godwin School for maintenance expenses, making $2,000 from District 5 Council Bank account, $500 District 3 Council Bank account, and $500 District 4 Council Bank account. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will be as motion carried.
Okay. And the last one is Super Tomorrow's requesting $2,000 for their Friday night live event. Funds will go towards operational expenses. Last grant approved for this event was $2,000 from Mr. Vincent. Mr. Vincent, placed on the agenda.
Could somebody make that motion to grant $2,000 from my council bank account?
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Schaefer, second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, to grant $2,000 to See for Tomorrow Incorporated for their Friday night live event from the District 1 council bank account. Questions on the motion? Take a vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will be as motion carried. Introduction to proposed zoning ordinances, Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We have one. It's in Mr. Riley's district, an ordinance to amend the future land use map of the comprehensive plan in relation to tax parcel 135-11.00-82.00.
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Riley introduced it. Thank you, sir. Council member comments. Council member comments. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Schaefer, second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, questions on a motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will, yes, we're now adjourned. Thank you, everybody.